Welcome to the station of decapitation without your head. I'm Nasty Neil.
I'm Treacherous Trista.
We're joined by the fine fellows here of Anything for Jackson. We have director Justin G.
Dyke.
Hello.
Producer Keith Cooper.
Hello.
And Harry Walsh, Julianne Richings.
Hello.
Hello. That's a perfect movie for the holidays, I think.
Well, we got, you know, we know everybody gets sick of watching the same ones over and over, so it was a nice time to bring a new one in.
Yeah.
And it has a nativity theme as well.
It does. It does. I was serious. I think it is for people like Trista and I, it's perfect for the holidays. In our audience, I think.
Yeah, great.
And both of us love the movie, not just because all three of you are here. It was a great cast, really well made. And what's the reaction been like so far? Because all the horror fans I know have really liked it.
So far, really, really great. We're getting lots of wonderful feedback, and you know, Twitter's been kind to us, and lots of wonderful reviews. So it's been really nice. We had a weird sort of premiere of the film, given that all the film festivals were in virtual mode. So I watched the premiere, you know, alone in my basement, and we had a few folks on Zoom, but it was, strange and sort of uneventful. So we weren't sure exactly how it would be received, but now that it's out and released, everyone's seems to be really connecting with it. So it feels great.
Yeah. Now, did Justin and Keith know each other before? Did you guys know each other before making the movie?
We did. Yeah. We've known each other for, I think, about 7 or 8 years now. We started working together, on a monkey movie, as most people do. So we went through that and we said, well, we should definitely keep doing this. And we've been working together for, I think, about 7 years now. It's been pretty crazy.
Interesting. So who came to who with the idea for the movie?
We actually ended up, this one came from a lie. So we were in a pitch meeting for another movie we were going to do. And they'd asked if we had anything supernatural, and we said, of course, we just didn't bring it with us. So that on the way home, we had to make up a movie so that I could get to work as soon as we got home. So Justin and I just do what we usually do and just kind of sit there and spitball back and forth until I think we eventually came up with Reverse Exorcism, and then just kind of snowball from there.
Interesting.
And the moral of the story is you should tell more lies.
Yeah, that's right.
It is interesting because last year about this time I met Trista on a movie in LA, and they had asked me if I would do the BTS footage, and I didn't even know what that meant. And I was like, yeah, of course. And then I had to Google it. And then Trista said, yes, that's the LA way. Always lie and say you can do anything they ask you to do.
Absolutely.
So I concur. It's a great point, Julian. Teach everyone watching. Lies is good. How did you get involved, Julian?
Well, I was fortunate enough to be sent the script, and I met these guys, and it went from there. And it was pretty fast process, too. We had a short period in which to shoot, and we had a short window, really. We didn't know, I mean, we knew that COVID was around, but we didn't know how imminent it was. I think that's fair to say, right, guys? It's funny looking back, it seems like a different world back then. But it was just pre-COVID.
On day one, I feel like it was still sort of, you know, something's weird happening on the other side of the world. But we had no idea what was coming, obviously.
And we were working in splendid isolation, really. I mean, that's how it felt, because we were in Barrie, which is a smaller town. It's a couple of hours north of Toronto, which is a major film center. And so we felt like we were in our own bubble anyway. So our own creative bubble, let alone the COVID thing. So we were sort of, we enjoyed an intense 3-week period.
Now, what did you guys think made Julian write for the role? Was he also in this monkey movie? Or?
No. Julian was too far above us at that point. No, it was honestly, I think Justin had seen Sheila in a movie called Cardinals. And he was like, oh, you've got to see Sheila McCarthy in this. So he showed me, and right away we were like, yeah, let's reach out. So I wrote Sheila in mind, just because Justin had a friend of a friend who knew her, and Julian I'd known forever on, you know, from all of his roles, and I'd actually had him on Facebook of all things. And I was like, I'll tell you what, I'm going to write for Julian and Sheila, and we'll see where we land. If we can kind of get, you know, the downgraded version of those actors, then we'll still be in good shape. Luckily Sheila came on, I think in 2 days or something like that. It was pretty crazy. And then, I pleaded to Julian and just let him know that I wrote it for him. And then, yeah, I don't know how, he felt after that, but, it was pretty incredible. So it was great.
I got to say, it's a great script, and, it lifts off the page. And, you know, as an actor, you kind of have a good radar. You don't know how something's going to ultimately end up, but you have a good idea, and it's a great script, it's a great idea. So I was immediately enthusiastic, as was Sheila when she first read it too.
Had you two worked together before? Because there's so much chemistry, you really seem like, you know, this is a couple that's been together.
No,
for a time.
No, we haven't. We've danced in similar dance halls, you know, like as you do in the business. I think we've actually been on the same movie, but never been in the same scenes, and we know friends of friends, and we have a very similar history in terms of our theater, film, television experience. So it was very easy, and we shared a vocabulary that didn't need a lot of time. We didn't need to agonize over who we were and what we were doing. We intuitively knew that each other was right for the role and right for our characters.
Mm-hmm. Trista, you have a question?
I do, yeah. I'd also like to emphasize what a fan I am of this film, foremost. But also, I'm wondering if you guys are all individually horror fans, and if you are, I'd love to know what some of your favorite films are.
Guys, do you want to go?
Yeah, I absolutely am. I grew up on horror. I started watching when I was about 3 years old and got hooked ever since. I think I saw Carrie I think it was Carrie was my first one on TV, and it was incredible. And then ever since then, I've watched every horror movie there is. So, you know, growing up, I loved things like The Changeling, The Shining, Amityville. Then as I got older, you know, Martyrs, things like that. Really, you know, I like good movies. So, you know, I'm glad that there's good horror in that genre too. It doesn't always get to be the case, but so yeah, if there's a smart horror, I'm on board.
Yeah, for me, I think I saw my first, you know, qualified horror movie, Nightmare on Elm Street 3. I saw it at a sleepover, and I wasn't supposed to be watching it anyways. So I don't know how old I would have been, you know, 8, 9, something like that. So I come home, you know, my parents find out the movie I'm watching. They're like, oh, you know, they didn't like all the blood and guts. They were a little more strict than Keith's situation. So like, yeah, you should be watching all that stuff. But then my dad took me aside and was like, you know, you don't want that blood and guts, but if you want to really be scared, I'll scare you. And then he pulled out movies like, you know, I think The Birds was one of my first. So he pulled out all the Hitchcock stuff. One of his favorites was Play Misty for Me. So I'm getting all these, like, you know, deep psychological scars instead of watching blood and guts all over the screen. And those were sort of the ones that I always gravitated towards. So from there, you know, Silence of the Lambs and all those sort of deep, dark thriller stuff, you know, all of Hitchcock's collection. And so that was, that was sort of my connection with horror.
Well, I go back to the UK in the 60s, and I grew up on a diet of Hammer horror and Hitchcock, and also kind of the big event horror films. Like, I remember going to the opening of The Exorcist with people outside telling me not to go in because it would be really bad for me, and, you know, Christian groups standing there and singing songs as we went in, and also the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So it was kind of like the horror films became a big event at the time, and I was thrilled by that. And I realized how visceral the experience of horror was. And I love the experience of horror in a theater, which is the thing that none of us have really experienced yet. And I can't wait to share anything for Jackson in a live theater, even with Justin and Keith and the rest of the cast, you know, for us all to be in one place. But hey, it doesn't matter. It's great watching the show. And my favorite all time movie, The Night of the Hunter by Charles Laughton, which mixes all genre. It doesn't get, and I think in many ways, like anything for Jackson, it doesn't get stuck in one mode, slasher or this or suspense, but, and it's, you know, it's got a whole bunch of different things going on.
It's a Christmas one too.
Yeah.
It's, what's that?
It's Christmas horror.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting you said that, because you guys talked about the you know, the festival run being weird this year. But that's what I always like about the festivals, is there's a lot of movies that don't necessarily fit in one genre. You know, they're, they could be horror, or they could be, you know, all these different things.
Yeah, and there, you know, speaking as an actor, there's an awful lot to wrap your chops around, you know, like we're not just playing the next scare, we're playing a bunch of stuff in there, and so are all the other actors, and we're all coming in at different places, and it's a complex film, and that's fun.
Yeah, because, you know, the characters are obviously doing terrible things, but there's a lot of, like, humanity and sympathy for both you and Sheila's role, because, you know, they're grieving grandparents. So was that hard to do? Because you want to play both your villain, really, but you're also, you know, someone that is justified.
Yeah, no, when you play it, you never play it as a villain. You always play it as, you know, from the inside, and you find reasons for the actions that you do. And in this case, it's very easy very clear story arc for each one of us, and different too. It wasn't just that we were sort of like an odd horror couple. You know, we were very fleshed out people, and each one of us had our own agenda too. You know, Henry and Audrey have their different paths. And in many ways, Henry, who is still working as a doctor, has his own relationship to facilitating Audrey's grief and keeping them together as a couple. They're not just absolutely in sync with everything that they do. They have their own complexity.
Mm-hmm. And when you mentioned story arc, I really like how your character, because at the beginning, he's really like reserved and he seems everything together, and you slowly unravel throughout the movie.
Yeah, well, that's fun for an actor. It's a gift. So, you know, and again, that's where I feel that we were all on the same page, and we had a really clear script to give us the highway. And within that, we had some freedom to kind of dance around a little bit. So yeah. It was great.
And it's also really funny. So I don't know about, you know, balancing the, because it's not like overtly funny. So like it still works as a horror movie. Is that something that you thought about when you guys were making the movie?
Yeah, it was. And actually, this is a question I'd never asked you, Julian, since it came out. For me, it was, we weren't going for, you know, set up punchline kind of humor. It was just, we wanted to make it as real as possible. And we just continued to ask that question. If I were to meet this type of person, what would they really do in this situation? And, you know, some of the dialogue, the things they speak about is just, you know, what you would say, even within grief. You know, people tell jokes at funerals. So yeah, I wanted to ask you, Julian, what was your take on people calling it almost like, a lot of people are calling it a dark comedy. Did you feel that you were making something overly funny at the time?
No, but I'm thrilled people do react that way. I think it's great. And I think it's a tribute to the film and the script, because laughter and horror go very, very closely in hand. And I think the thing about humor, it's the existence of the ordinary within the extraordinary. Mm. So Sheila and I are never playing the, we're demonic and possessed, and you know, we're little people. We want a cup of tea. We need reassurance. We need a little pat on the head and a little this and that. And you play the little things, and that in the context of the overall ridiculousness of the situation that they're in is funny. But we can't play it. That's up to you, Justin, to kind of like sit with your cutting and your, you know, the way that you put it together. To an audience, it might be funny, but it can't be to us.
Mm-hmm. I always think that when you ground, when you talk about, you know, you guys are acting like an actual couple and real people, I think when the weird stuff, supernatural stuff starts to happen, that helps the whole movie, because like everything else is kind of mundane and realistic.
Yeah, I'm also fortunate in that I actually bring to set the experience of having been married for 36 years. So my wife completes sentences for me generally, you know, like I'll go, and she got, you were going to say blah, 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 blah. So it, and so that was pretty easy too. I channeled some of my dithery partner stuff that I inevitably find myself doing.
Yeah. I think I noticed I noticed the first time I watched it, but I watched it again for the show. And I picked up on the comedy, I think, more the second time around. Especially, I think Sheila has some of the best lines. as Audrey. There's some good, just like one line. Yeah. Just played very straight.
And calming. I mean, but it is funny that the very idea that she's the organizer too. And I think that's where a lot of the comedy, like she's bringing things back to a normal and on track, you know, and given the context of what that track is, again, it's funny, you know, but it's context. It's not her playing it for laughs. She's playing it very, very true.
Mm-hmm. Which is the best comedy, I think.
Yeah.
Trista, you have a question?
I can't wait to see more of your work, all of your work. So can you guys tell me about upcoming projects?
Guys?
Well, yeah, things are in turmoil for Keith and I in the best possible way. We sort of came up making, you know, as Keith said, we started on a monkey movie, and then we've done a lot of kids, family, teen movies, and romance, Christmas type films. So that's sort of been our day job for a long time, and we're delivering entertainment for a broadcaster that wants it. But this is our first real sort of, you know, independent film. So it took, as Keith said, probably 7 years we've been talking about it. So it took that long to get this first one off the ground. But now that it's out, we're starting to get a lot more options. So we still have our stack of ideas and scripts that we were trying to get made for those 7 years. And we got a whole bunch of new ones too. So I can't put my finger on which one it's going to be yet, but we've got more than we're going to have time to make that we're really excited about. So I think that's what I can say.
Yeah. Well, that's good. It's better to have a bunch of ideas than we don't have enough ideas.
That's right.
And Josh in the movie is perfectly creepy. He's one of my favorite characters. I actually like all the characters, but I can't imagine anyone else really playing that character. He's really perfect for it.
Yeah, it was funny. He actually auditioned for two much smaller parts. And he was Josh is a chameleon, you know, because when we watch the two parts, actually even, you know, as distinct as Josh is, it took me a second to realize that it was even the same actor trying out for two different parts because he played them so differently. And then so Justin and I both, I think I was, you know, watching it, and, you know, because we get the audition tapes. And I was just about to call Justin, and Justin's like, "Hey, have you seen this Josh guy?" He's like, "Oh my God, we got to change it. We got to put him in his ENU." And we just started going back and forth right away. So we asked him, you know, would you rather, you know, be interested in something like this? And luckily Josh is incredible. He was just so excited. So, and you're right. Yeah, he's phenomenal.
How close is the finished movie to your original script? Is it pretty much what you wrote?
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing with Justin and I working together for so long, I don't think there's really anything. We shot the entire script. I think we ended up taking out two or three tiny minor scenes, just things that didn't end up moving the story forward. So Justin and I had really, you know, that whole time that I'd written the script, we had time to go over it and, you know, what we wanted to shoot and change things and add things. But it was, I'd say it's probably 95% of the same. I don't think we changed too much.
No, Keith and I were both producers on the film as well. So we were, very fortunate to sort of keep it in-house as it were from start to finish. So once the film got greenlit and we were learning, you know, this is our budget, this is the cast, we went through and adjusted accordingly. But that was all still from Keith as well. So if I saw an issue, I'd be like, you know, hey, well, you know, the location, for instance, very straightforward. We have an extra staircase here that we can use. So let's rewrite it to play in an attic instead of on the main floor or whatever. So just little things like that, I would say, okay, Keith, here's the problem. Throw out my ideas, but then he would be able to take it and go put it in his own words and keep the script totally consistent. So it's not the first draft that he wrote, but the whole thing is 100% from Keith. And I just throw ideas at him and he fixes them. So that's the joy of working with someone like that.
It was fun as an actor too. It really felt lean. It didn't feel like we had to cut a bunch of fat out. And with these guys who are used to working together and used to working on getting a product together under pressure, that Justin knows how to shoot, to edit, you know, he knows what he wants. And that meant that we were focusing on the right things rather than the kind of, well, we could do this and we could do that. We could, you know, we had time actually within the scenes to really get the right takes, the right tone and everything. So it was very impressive. And it's, I do quite a bit of horror shooting and, you know, with varied quality. And I got to say, this is one of the leanest, tightest experiences that I've had.
It's not really a question, but when you brought up Hammer Horror before, I did want to say when I was watching anything for Jackson, I did think like you have like great features for horror and like classic horror, like Hammer Horror. You're like
Peter Cushing. I got the old Peter Cushing cheekbones, right?
Yeah. Matt does a complete compliment.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's an interesting thing. I don't consciously do that, but you know, we are what we absorb, especially in our youth, you know, like it becomes very important and embedded in us. And it's a go-to for any artist. You know, you go to all the influences in your life.
You mentioned festivals a couple times. Had you guys ever had them? Well, I know Julian probably has, but have either of you had a movie in festivals before this?
Surprisingly, the monkey movie didn't go to a festival. No.
I'm going to seek out this monkey movie. This is like a big plug for the monkey movie.
Yeah. So I'm pushing that one hard this week. Yeah, it's true. No, this was our first one. You know, again, it was, you know, Justin and I have had great day jobs, but it's a different market. They don't need any advertising at all. They know exactly what they're getting. So it was, this was the first one. We were really excited. We got into some great festivals. It was certainly a different experience, as Justin said, but, you know, hopefully we reach extra people because they didn't have to travel places. And, you know, so it's, you know, my grandma was never going to go to Montreal to watch our movie. So,
I had films. I've been involved with a lot of films and festivals. So I'd worked as a cinematographer, editor, or even just, you know, part of the crew. I've been to festivals with the cast and crew and had that experience. And, you know, when we started rolling cameras, I was looking forward to having that, with our own film, but yeah, it didn't work out quite that way, but that's okay because it's, you know, the film is still on its own trajectory.
Yeah. Agreed. And we're enjoying the success of it now, you know, and we're figuring out ways to deal with that success. So it's great.
Mm-hmm. Trista, another question?
Yeah, I was very impressed with the special effects on the film. I was wondering if you guys could talk a little about the team behind that.
Absolutely, yeah. Again, Justin and I were lucky enough, we worked with Carly Morse. Just an absolutely incredible special effects makeup artist. You know, for anything that we'd hoped for, Carly would just give us 10 times more. You know, a couple times too, like just little things even, you know, just somebody of that level. You know, the scene where Henry, we're trying not to give too many spoilers, but there's the part where he's burying person, she's like, oh, do you guys want an arm? Like just a realistic arm? She just has a perfect realistic arm that is, you know, you're like, oh my God, you just have this? And it was just in her trunk. She's like, yeah, it's right here. But, you know, and just her level of enthusiasm too, you know, there's another effect that comes later end of the movie, I'm trying to figure out how to describe these things. But we ran out of money. We were definitely all out. And Carly was just like, oh, I have this great idea. I want to do this. And we were like, I have like $9. I was like, is that a $9 effect? And she's like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I've always wanted to do it. So I'm going to just do it. So, I couldn't talk her up enough. Carly's phenomenal, incredible to work with, and just the sweetest person in the world too. So that makes it even better.
A great example is we needed a blood cannon in this movie. A nice big spray. And Keith and I had done, Keith had a very successful sketch comedy career as well before this. So we worked on one of his comedy videos, and we needed a blood spray. And so we were trying everything, just, you know, you're on YouTube. How do you make, you know, blood spray? And what we had come up with is one of our friends who didn't even work in film just drank the blood in his mouth and just did a full spit take right in Keith's face. And that was the best thing we could come up with for a nice blood spray. And then so we're,
you know, pre-COVID.
That was pre-COVID. So we're talking about, all right, Keith, who are we going to bring in to spit the blood on the wall? Carly's like, you guys are idiots. So I'm going to bring this thing that I already have. And it was great. It was, I was doing the edit, and the cue for when that blood went off was one frame off. It was, I've never seen anything more perfect. So I think we trimmed that one frame out and it just made, it was flawless. I've never seen anything work so well.
Excellent. So if anyone needs some blood spraying.
The spitting looks good. It looks good.
Yeah.
And we haven't mentioned Constantine, who plays Shannon, and she's great in the movie, and most of the movie she's tied up in a bed. So I think that's kind of a hard role to really stand out in.
Multiple people warned us, like, you don't want to put a character tied to a bed for the whole movie. It's going to get tired and old, but we didn't listen. And then we got Constantina, and now we can just say we were right. So if you're going to put someone in a bed for an entire movie, make sure you get Constantina, because she's going to make that part just come to life and still continue with an arc. And yeah, so.
It's cool for us too. I mean, Keith can talk about this more in terms of the writing of her character, but you know, as an actor, everybody talks about myself and Sheila, which, you know, was a joy to do, but in many ways we weren't just a couple, we were there was a threesome. And you know, as the movie goes on, Constantina becomes more and more strong and has her own agenda and her own agency, and that's a great thing. Just in human terms, it's a great thing. But also as an actor, you know, you've got more angles to play, more things, more colors to play.
Yeah, there's a really nice quiet scene near the end with you and her.
Yeah, which, you know, and my relationship to her is slightly different than Audra's relationship to her, and she's working us too, so she has her own agenda, and that's a rich and great thing.
Julian said Keith could talk about that. Did you want to add anything about
Constantine? Well, since you wrote it, I guess you could.
you know, it was just really interesting because, as Julian says, there's just so much you have to play with three lead characters. And so I think Justin and I kind of eventually got to a point where we thought, well, let's have it where with the flashbacks, we're going to tell Constantina's arc really happens before the movie starts, right? Hers is about her journey of you know, having this, finding out she's pregnant, you know, dealing with it, coming to terms, doing whatever she gets to. So her arc really comes before the movie starts. And then it's dealing with it. Whereas, Henry's character, I think we talked about his arc is throughout the movie, and then Audrey's, correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, we kind of figured out that was like, hers is the big, huge span, right? It's really Audrey's story that we're kind of all inside.
Yeah, Audrey changed a lot from, you know, when I guess the story begins, from when she loses her grandson. That's when Audrey's arc starts, but we don't really even see it. We learn it through other characters. Mm-hmm. And how Henry deals with her, and how he treats her in the flashbacks, and you can see sort of how she's changed. But then in those moments of just, you know, I've lost my keys, that's probably what their life was like before this whole story started, and that's the one that Henry is chasing to try and get back.
And before we started recording, Keith told us it was 34 there in Toronto, so, and it seems very cold in the movie. It really comes through. So how cold was it when you guys were filming?
It was a weird 3 weeks. We had days when the grass was showing, and we had like our snowblower scene the next day. And we're like, we got to have the guy clear the driveway. What are we going to do? And sure enough, that night we got a massive blizzard. Our production manager and line producer are outside pushing trucks out of the ditch. So it was crazy. So some days were, I'm trying to do the Celsius to Fahrenheit math because we're a bunch of Canadians. Anyways, above freezing. And the day when, you know, like a bit of a spoiler, we had to have Constantina outside not wearing winter gear. It was so cold that day.
That was a really tough day.
It was a really tough day. So we had Constantina and Yannick outside, and we were we'd get the shot and then just send the actors running inside or jump in the heated up car as fast as they could, because it was nasty out that day. So it spanned a lot.
Sorry, go ahead, Julian.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, Canadian actors should put it on their resumes that they're very good at working in the cold, even to the point where we don't breathe out, so you don't see the steam coming out of our mouth.
No, I was just going to say, I highly recommend making movies with Canadian actors, because everybody was so nice and accommodating. Same thing. Like, even Yannick, his scenes took a while on our coldest day. And, you know, you keep asking, you're just like, can we please help? Can we get you some ear? And he's like, no, I'm fine. Like, don't worry about it. You know, and his ears are like all red. And I'm like, he's worth a lot of money. We cannot, please don't ruin this beautiful man's face. We're going to get into so much trouble. But yeah, everybody was just so incredible and accommodating. Even funny enough, going back to the Constantine on the bed, everybody was doting on her the whole time. Sheila and Julian were constantly, you know, even after this horrific, horrible scene, and they'd be like, okay, are you all right? Can we get you anything? Or let's sit you up. You know, it was very sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no spoilers, but the scene with the snowblower is pretty awesome.
That was all the product. I mean, you guys came up with that too.
We did. Right? Yeah.
That's really.
Carly gave us some tips on how to make the blood, but Keith and I spent a lot of days practicing with the snowblower.
And flossing scene is someone who flosses every night. It's kind of put me off of flossing.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet scene.
Yeah, the Dental Association does not approve of our film.
Julian, you mentioned you do a lot of horror movies in different quality. You know, some are better than others, you said. That was your own words. I'm not saying that. But so when you saw anything for Jackson for the first time, what did you think? Because obviously it's different once it's all edited and put together.
Oh, unabashedly, I was thrilled. I thought it was great. I had a sense that when we were shooting it, though, you know, you can tell the way it's coming together, the way everybody's performance is, and what we're focusing on and what we're not focusing on. All those things come into play. And I loved it. I'm very proud of it. And I'm looking forward to these guys doing, you know, coming up with something else too. It's very exciting for me as a, you know, I'm an actor in my 60s in a Toronto, independent film community is vibrant, but you know, it needs a boost, and it needs people coming into it from different places and with different energies, and it's very exciting for me to see.
Mm-hmm. Trista, you have another question?
I wanted to mention Troy James. Thought obviously no spoilers, but he's responsible for definitely one of the most effective scenes in the film, and I rewound it and watched it again, and I'd just love to know more about working with him and that casting process. And were you guys just stunned to find him?
Yeah, so the casting process for Troy was incredible. There's an amusement park here in Canada called Canada's Wonderland, and every year they have a Halloween thing. So like 15-20 years ago, I was there with a bunch of friends. And they have a bunch of people dressed up as zombies and ghosts and whatnot going through the park, scaring people. So I see Troy there, and he's chasing around people upside down. And I made all my friends, obviously, we got to watch this guy. So I stood there for 20, 30 minutes, just watching him, you know, walk up to people normally and then do his thing, and just people losing their minds, running away from him. And so when we started talking about this movie, Keith brings to light this, this suffocating ghost is like, oh my God, we need, you know, this guy I remember from years and years ago. So start Googling, you know, YouTube, you know, home videos from Halloween Haunt to Canada's Wonderland. We find his name. We tell our casting director. She looks him up. She's like, all right, good news. I found him. Bad news. He's in Guillermo del Toro movies. He was in the newest Hellboy. He was in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. 2 weeks ago, he was on James Corden. I'm like, oh, great. So we missed. Okay. So like, all right, well, we need to, you know, throw out a casting call for contortionists. We want to find a contortionist somewhere. We find one. Do you remember her name, Keith?
It's Troy's partner.
Yeah. Anyways, she was phenomenal. We said yes, go with right away. We'll cast her. She had a scheduling conflict. She calls us up, you know, very kindly says, "I'm so sorry, I can't make this work. But my performing partner, his name's Troy James, and he might be available." So she put us in touch. Sure enough, Troy, just the nicest man in the world, agrees to come out. He brings his own contact lenses. I think his biggest demand was he wanted a cup of hot chocolate.
Yeah.
What a diva.
Yeah, what a diva. And then, yeah, he just... he showed up and did incredible things. And that was, you know, directing someone like that was a new experience. You just say, you know, and I've done this before with actors. You start here and you have to get there. What's your motivation? But he's got so many different ways to get from A to B. I said, you know, what do you got? And he would just drop to the floor and show me all these bizarre ways of moving. And I'm like, oh, hey, do that one. That was lots of fun. And he did the whole thing in reverse. So he did the entire move. And then I asked him, can you do it backwards? So he did it backwards. And a number of the shots are him doing it backwards. And then we play the film in reverse. So yeah, that's my Troy James story. He's the greatest.
That's really funny that worked out. Yeah.
It was funny too. Like it's for Joss and I, it was heartbreaking because we actually had to cut. That was one of the scenes that we had to trim down. We were just getting notes that it was just too long. And I think Justin and I just had rose glasses on because we were like, no, leave the whole thing. It's like, you know, it's like a 12-minute scene and we're just watching Troy. And so we just keep that for ourselves now. But yeah, he's phenomenal.
I've never seen a cast and crew pack around a monitor. Yeah. Saying, it's when Troy was actually doing it. We were all going, oh, and we were all trying hard not to gasp out loud, right. You know, and ruin the sound. It's extraordinary.
Totally. Yeah, speaking of that, Lynette Ware, who plays Detective Bellows, it was phenomenal. And she'd come on set midday, and I was like, oh, you got to see this. So she sits down, and I was like, we just have to, you know, she knows to be quiet. And as soon as she just explodes, and she's like, I got to leave. She's like, I got to walk away. She couldn't handle it. So it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But we knew he was effective right then.
Yeah. So Anything for Jackson is on Shudder, and on Facebook, Shaheen asked, is there any plan for a Blu-ray release?
I think so. We don't get all that information, unfortunately, but I believe there is a deal in place for a physical release, and that's all I know. I'll be posting on Twitter or Instagram or whatever once I hear news, so people can find out that way if they want, but... I'm really hoping it comes out very soon because, I don't have a good enough copy of it yet. I can stream it, but I want a nice proper surround sound Blu-ray.
Yeah. Very cool. And so we love the movie and hope everyone checks it out. Everyone I know so far has loved the movie too.
Awesome.
Not just because you guys are here. They've like.
And, great. Well, thanks very much.
Yeah. Where can people follow you guys online?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram just under my name, Justin G. Dyke. I'm slowly getting better at social media. I'm never great at it, but I'm starting to post a bit more.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram. Twitter at Julian Richings and Instagram Julian_Richings.
And I think I'm Keith is a Jerk at both of those.
That's very fitting. No. Well, thanks, guys. It's been great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Stay safe and happy holidays.
Thank you. Guys too.
You too.
Bye. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
From ancient terrors to the search for modern-day conspiracies, The Tomb of Nick Cage is the new sound in horror rock. Uncover the mystery of old world horror for the new world order on iTunes, Amazon, and more. Ripley, we should have listened. Sit here on a lie. Barwell and Yutani. Now we're gonna die. The Tomb of Nick Cage. Here come the night. Mostly, they're coming at night. Mostly. Find out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The Tomb of Nick Cage. Okay.